Alrighty. That is Keb Mo, in case you're wondering. He used to be Kevin Moore, but in his part of the country, nobody calls him Kevin and nobody says Moore. So Keb Mo was what they'd call him, and that's what he stuck with, Keb Mo, with Let Your Light Shine. This is from his 2004 album, Keep It Simple. It's a great album. This is Lead Stories. I'm Nutrice Lead, and we begin the week on a doubtful note. Doubtful because, is it going to be mostly good, or is it going to be mostly bad, or it's just in the middle? Take a little bit of either. I don't know, but the good thing is that it's the beginning of a new week, and we should orient ourselves to that, that we have survived yet another week and beginning a new one. Well, as you know, we ended last week on a sad note, a very sad note, in fact. Two of our valiant soldiers were called home. The Reverend Cordy Tyndall, C.T. Vivian, at age 95, and Representative John Robert Lewis, at age 80, were both called home on Friday after waging decades-long battles for civil and human rights, along with their exemplar and inspiration, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. They all struggled together, this cadre of very concerned people who put themselves in leadership because somebody had to take it on, somebody had to do something, and they stepped forward to do that. They were the last of a corps inspired by King to fully engage in nonviolent battle to force U.S. administrations to uphold and protect the rights of all citizens. Under King's leadership, they and other members of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference were a critical part of the vanguard in the movement as it was then beginning to form itself and engaging in fighting for civil rights, not just for African Americans, although we can clearly see that that was where they started because that's where the injustice was. But they had in mind a universal struggle with the African American struggle at the epicenter, because that was what was so glaringly needed, leadership in that capacity at that time. And they continued until, of course, as I said, they were called home on Friday. It is not a sad thing, and we shouldn't see it as a sad thing, when people do set out to do something and they get it done, and they leave evidence of the work that they have done and continued to do throughout the years without anybody pushing them or, you know, bribing them. They just did the work that needed to be done, and they felt called to do it. The remarkable thing about all of the members of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference and others that sprang up as duplicate organizations all over the United States, basically, maybe they didn't take the same name, but that wasn't important. They took on the same mission. And because of the work of these thousands of women and men, we are all the better off for it today. And it was because of their tremendous sacrifice and the chances they took, even with their lives, for the things that they did. And that was to call attention and to move toward a solution, to encourage people also to get the courage to face their situation wherever they were and to find a way to fight against injustice. This was a magnificent calling, and they didn't shy away from it. Looking back today, it seems as if they were just a well-dressed, polite people, you know, marching in the hot sun. But of course, we know that was not what they were doing. They were, by example, showing people that you just cannot be static. You can't accept injustice. You have to do something, and it is your duty. It is your job to do it, to face it down. We often think of it as a kind of, an era in which people were just so polite. They were beaten, but they didn't fight back. People spat at them and on them, but they didn't spit back. And there's a tendency to look at the film of, look at films of the situations they got caught in and say, well, you know, they're really crazy to do these things. They know that they're going to come up against a resistance. So why would you put yourself in that place? There is no easy answer to that. And we shouldn't try and even answer the question, because they gave the answer. The answer is that they were doing what had to be done. And they were putting their lives on the line, not for themselves, but for all of us, for this entire society, Black, white, Latino, Asian, gay, straight, all of that came into the mix little by little, because it was all about seeking and demanding justice and putting one's very life on the line for it, in facing down a system hell-bent on denying it. Sometimes peacefully denying it, but very often, more often than not, at the point of bayonets, at the point of tear gas and billy clubs and arrests, and even death. So sometimes we have a tendency, again, to trivialize this era of the beginning of this movement, the civil rights movement, as a bunch of, they're naive people, but they weren't. They were showing, in fact, what courage looked like. They were giving a vivid example of the kind of courage that is needed to face down a system that was determined to deny forever civil rights to African Americans and other ostracized groups in the society. They didn't ask for pay. They didn't ask for goodies. They didn't sell themselves off. They maintained the integrity and steadfastness and utter allegiance to the communities that they were fighting for and that they were represented. And so, with the deaths of C.T. Vivian and John Lewis, a chapter is closed. As I said in the opening, the last two soldiers of this group in the vanguard of the movement were called home. Come home and rest. The question is, did we learn anything from them? Did we adopt the same standards? Have we held to it? I think the evidence shows that a very strong effort was made. And indeed, there was a transition from the seminal group to today. We cannot deny that much of what is going on in the area of civil rights, and this is whether, no matter what the ethnic identification is of the group that is waging this struggle, it started with them. There was no handbook. There were no lectures in how to get beat up, how to resist. They didn't have those things going on. They just knew that one of the most important weapons they had was their bodies. And they put that on the line for us today. They suffered, as Shakespeare would have said, the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, so that generations later, we benefited. We were able to accelerate, even though we didn't think so. We think we did it. No, they set the tone. They set the pace. They set the idea. They set the methodology. And we must always revere that. They gave it to us. It was their gift to us, their sacrifice for us. And so we should honor them. Let's pause right now for just a few seconds as we salute the Reverend Cordy Tyndale Vivian and John Robert Lewis, who went home on Friday. Let us pray within our own hearts that they were well received and well rewarded, and let us thank them for the sacrifices they made, for their steadfastness, for their integrity, and for their love of their people and all people. We pause for a minute. All right. Well, I hope you thank them and we can move on. Let me open it up so that you could express yourself with regard to this particular subject. Is there a sense of loss that you have? Because, of course, the last remaining soldiers in that struggle have died. Do you feel that that we have work to do, that they inspired us to do that work? Do you feel personally inspired by the examples that they set? Let's talk about that for a minute. At 888-874-4888. This is just recalling. And I urge you, by the way, this is a good time to read a lot. Get to the library, read up a lot about all of the members of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. And the conference itself, the period in which served as the crucible for the birth of this conference, and all the years that it waged a struggle in our behalf. Jay from New York, what are you thinking?
Good afternoon, Teresa. I hope you had a beautiful weekend. Hello to your listener audience. I have to be honest with you. I'm appreciative of C. Vivian and John Lewis, but I have a total different perspective on both men. I can't really say too much or have issues with Vivian. I think C.T. Vivian played his role and he did what he did on a level that who could compare, and we have to give great acceptance to him for what he's done. But John Lewis is a different story. John Lewis is a man who, as far as I'm concerned, and I may be chastised for saying this, claim to fame is that he was beaten on the George Pettus Bridge. But when you take into consideration what he did as a congressman and for his community, he didn't do a good job. I'm sorry to say. I mean, his community is one of the most worst-off communities in Atlanta. Just like in Harlem, Charlie Rangel left our community in dire straits, in a sense. I mean, these are men who basically came into office and did something, but if you put it into total context, they never developed their community on the level in which they should have based on what their so-called principles were. And I see it as
Let me say this to you. Your opinions notwithstanding, there's a thing called grace.
Here we go.
Grace. Yep. There's a thing called grace. We're talking about a person who died Friday, who was considered in Congress as the conscience of the Congress. And that is by all legislators. His life was not about just about being beaten on the Edmund Pettus Bridge, which, by the way, there's a proposal to name the bridge after him. Because of his courage that day. It is at a time like this, you hold back on criticism, or what do you think is criticism, or what do you think is appropriate criticism or justified criticism? When you remember somebody, and again, your view is your view. I'm not saying you shouldn't have a view, but you should exercise some grace. We could always beat him up another day.
Grace. you know, grace is a thing that people use to set aside what is honest and what is dishonest.
Because no, it's not.
The bottom line is he was a great man.
It is about a moment after, especially in an instance where somebody has died. And the record shows, even though you picked one thing here, one thing there with which you have great reservations about and criticisms of, but you fail to recognize that for the vast majority of his life, he was engaged in struggle and not for himself. You give him no credit for that.
That's not true. That's not true.
I'm not arguing. I'm not, in this moment, I'm not arguing. I'm saying try, if you can, to muster up even a modicum of grace. And
well, I'll say the grace was the man did a job and a service for the people, in a sense, to move forward in a direction that one would say some need to be and some don't need to be. But he did a job that I would say should be commended for what his goal was, and one would say his goal was to make humanity better. But in the process, does humanity make all lives better? Have a good day.
Right. Thank you. It's very important for us to know what is expected in turn of us in specific circumstances. In a situation like this, someone has died. It is not the time to be critical. And if you're going to be critical, you have to have the broad span of knowledge. You don't pick one thing over here and say, well, I disagree with that, and therefore I don't approve of this person. We come from a tradition of grace and respect. Let's maintain it. On another day, when we're in fighting mode, we can take a look at the ways in which he didn't measure up, perhaps. But not today. Today, we remember the man who associated himself, or who was associated with, Dr. Martin Luther King, who was among a group that organized themselves as the vanguard. They turned out to be. They didn't organize themselves as the vanguard, but they turned out to be the vanguard of the civil rights movement. And they stayed on the straight and narrow all those years until they died. That is a spectacular record. And not many people could say that about themselves or people they know, that they stayed committed. They suffered terribly. In the case of Martin Luther King, the ultimate price, his own life. So let's not be critical. Let's remember them and thank them for advancing our cause. And even though we were not connected to them, because we're a whole new generation, we know that they were connected to us and worked in our behalf. Okay, let's move along. I want to talk next about Kanye West. Kanye West, as you know, is mogul, an entertainment mogul. He has announced that he is running for president in this election year. His very announcement triggered a lot of laughter and derision. But I don't find anything funny. I don't find anything funny about it. And here's the reason. Kanye West, like the President of the United States, suffers with a major mental problem. And those who know him are saying that in this time right now, he is experiencing his problem more intensely than at other times. The question is not whether it's funny that he wants to run for president. That's not my issue at all. My issue is, who are these people around him who are letting him express his dysfunction this publicly when they should in fact be stepping in and helping him to a level of stability in his own life? That's what's important. Kanye West is running for president. It's not funny. We are seeing what happens when people, even with all that money and fame, there's nobody standing in his corner. And there he is acting out the way bipolar people do. He's acting out publicly, and it's now become a source of entertainment, a kind of macabre entertainment. Did you believe that Kanye West is running for president? Ha ha ha. That is not the point. The point is, he is melting down. And nobody around him apparently has been able to protect him from himself in this moment, in his condition. Now, that is the real tragedy here. That's really something you should be talking about. If you love somebody and you know they're not in the best place right now, psychologically, they need intensive treatment. They need to be taken someplace where they can get that treatment. They need to be removed from day-to-day events and go someplace quiet and concentrate on getting better. This is a very serious problem. I'm not talking about it as some kind of incidental thing at all. This is very serious. The man clearly is in desperate need of help, because what I have seen, you know, he's laughing and he's jovial and completely out of the moment. And people are looking at this as a source of entertainment. Here's a person, here's Kanye West, for crying out loud. Well, look, we had Donald Trump. He's elected. He's our current president. So there's nothing funny about mental illness. And especially, you have an African-American man who, I'm not an expert by any means, but I could tell when somebody's in trouble. I could tell when somebody is in desperate need of help and who should not be allowed to go out in public like this, unrestrained, and just talk off the top of his head. His administration would give $1 million to every woman who has a baby. You know, this is not normal. So why aren't his people or his family surrounding him at this moment? Because they're seeing him. He's falling apart. He's not making a speech. He is deep into some kind of a psychological rift where he's neither here nor there. He's in a whole other world of his own making, in his own mind. And the whole world is looking at him as a macabre sense of entertainment, a warped form of entertainment. This is wrong. And we should be talking loudly about it and condemning people who would have him sacrifice himself this way. He shouldn't be running for president. He should be running for treatment. He should be in a place, a secure place, where that is the only thing he does, is get treatment for whatever the condition or conditions are that are making him freak out this way. He is, in fact, freaking out. That's how I read it. He's not in his normal frame of mind. As I said, I compare two people, both with deep psychological problems. One is white and is taken seriously because he has a lot of money. And he was allowed, they covered for him until recently when it became undeniable that there's something very wrong with Donald Trump. But for all intents and purposes, he got accorded a level of respect that he would rightfully deserve. The other candidate is black from the entertainment world. So was Trump. He was from the entertainment world. They handled him very differently. His family handled him differently. His whole apparatus presented him very differently. And he got elected. And he still is in office with people covering for him here and there and everywhere to make him look normal and sane. And he isn't. That's what I hooked on. He hasn't a prayer. You announce that you're running for president 4 months before the election. You can't be serious. And nobody has latched on to the fact that this man needs to be taken off the scene for a while, put in the hands of the best clinicians that you could find because he has the money to pay for it, and make sure that the number one priority is his mental health. You don't make him perform like a buffoon to entertain the masses. And people can clearly see there's something wrong with him. That's not supposed to happen. And I think it is absolutely wrong for his family and his so-called friends and even his employees he pays to manage his image, that they would let him get this far down on the scale of self-respect, that he becomes an object of derision and entertainment. And here's a black guy who is as far away from presidency, the presidency, as you can get. But look at the way Trump was managed. Two different things. Both involved and affected by mental illness. Trump is mentally ill every day. Kanye looks like a buffoon, because his people don't understand what they're doing or not doing for him. So I just wanted to make a note of that. But you see a direct contrast, literally in black and white, on how people who you think would have the support systems around them to prevent them from falling prey, even by their own hand, to embarrassments like this. And the issue is Kanye West is in serious trouble. He's in distress. He needs help. He does not need, you know, promotion. He needs help. And somebody has got to prioritize this in his life. He's not in a position to organize his campaigns or anything like that. He's not in a position to do that. So why let him do it? The counter argument is, well, he's doing what he wants to do. I can't tell him what to do. Well, then you don't need to be employed by him. You don't need to be paid by him. You need to go someplace else. This man needs immediate and serious intervention because his health is at stake, his mental health, and probably even his physical health is at stake. And we're watching him self-immolate, setting himself on fire in public and for our entertainment. I'm not entertained by this, and we shouldn't be. I want to talk also about Portland, Oregon, where we saw over the weekend and in the past week a very interesting ratcheting up of the police state. Many people in Portland, Oregon haven't given up on the idea of protest, and they've kept protests going on many issues. But last week, we saw many protesters confronted by people nobody seemed to know who they were. But they were wearing camouflage uniforms. They were very, very aggressive. They came out of nowhere. They grabbed people off the street and threw them into unmarked vans, and they disappeared with their cargo. We haven't gotten an explanation for that. And even the mayor and the governor of Oregon had said, this is extremely troubling, and so troubling, they want these agents out. They want them gone. So obviously, these were federalized agents, agents operating or officers operating under the aegis of the police. They had no badges, they had no identification, they never identified themselves to people they arrested or detained and removed by force. So many are saying that this seems to be a Trumpian idea to demonstrate a ratcheting up of force against peaceful protesters, or to show the power of the state. Trump, in fact, has said publicly that Portland basically lost the city to the protesters, and they were incapable of maintaining a sense of law and order. And that's when these people, and why these people showed up with their vans, unmarked vans, and their camouflage outfits, and their very, very aggressive ways of arresting people. I'm inclined to agree. In fact, I do agree. Everybody is shocked about it. But at the same time, we haven't, other than filing a complaint and insisting that these officers, these, I call them federalized because they're operating under federal jurisdiction. I haven't seen, especially recently, even with all the protests going on, we've not seen anything like that. And it caused a great deal of trauma to people to just see that. And therefore, the message was very clear that the Trump administration is, you know, going the hard line. And with that, it means that your constitutional rights are not guaranteed. We still don't know. Many of the protesters are still unaccounted for. People don't know where they were taken and what happened to them once they were put in these vans, these vehicles. So I thought I would ask your reaction to that. Let's take this break and we come back to your questions and your comments at 888-874-4888. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Beatrice Lead, and we're talking about a couple of subjects today. You get to pick which one you want to address. Khalil from South Carolina, you start off.
Hi, Beatrice.
Hi.
You put a lot on the table.
It was actually just three subjects.
Yeah.
But they're heavy. Like,
yes, exactly, like a Rick cream sauce. But I'm glad, you know, it prompted me to call. I don't know what else to say about John Lewis. That was just a courageous, heroic American hero, and I just don't know, you know, what else there is to say about, you know. But your other observations about Kanye West, I think, and as I was listening, it made me think of one other thing. This is really boils down to enablers, because
yes.
I don't know that we've talked, but you know, I remember our conversation about Tracy Abrams, and I recalibrated and I thought about, you know, what you were saying about her, and it made me think about, well, just as you said a few minutes ago, who does she have around her that would not say, hey, you know, this is not appropriate. You cannot beg Joe Biden for a position in the cabinet. That's inappropriate. So, you see, so it's about enablers. And Kanye West is obviously, you know, he's had episodes before that were, you know, blamed on dehydration, this and that, you know, just some cockamamie stuff. But it's obvious if you observe his behavior that there's something going on. And the reason I use the word enabler is that there is his wife.
Yes, she is an, I would say she could be and should be looked at as an enabler. But if so, she's not the only one. There's a whole bunch of people around Kanye West whose job it is right now should have been to squirrel him away to someplace quiet where he can get deep treatment, because that's what he needs. We don't care about whether he wants to run for president, really, because we could see he is not prepared for that.
Exactly.
We want him to get better. We want him to, you know, be able to find himself in a safer place with himself, by the way.
And the same, right. And the same thing goes for this current president, because his children, his in-laws, they're enablers.
You're breaking up quite a bit.
Yeah, this is not a great connection. The enablers in the White House and around the president, that's almost elder abuse. I can make an argument for that, you know, in terms of the president. But you see, now mental health, the lack of mental health and mentally unfit people in power and leadership roles is becoming normalized away. And it's dangerous. It's dangerous.
But is it becoming normalized based on racial considerations? The president should not be president. He had been showing mental instability for years. The first program I did, as I said before, once when he was inaugurated, I did a whole program saying exactly that he was unstable, he is not fit to be president.
Well, exactly.
It took a long time. 3 years ago I said that.
Well, you know, one reason, and I'm just saying this as someone, that's my field, that's what my degree is in psychology. And what I'm saying is that Americans don't take mental health hygiene seriously. They say, oh, you know, brush it off. It's not serious. Oh, you're just down today, or they're just acting out, when many times it's something more. And even to the folks who have not had that type of education or experience, once after the inauguration, once the president made it clear that he really believed that the inauguration crowd size for him was larger than Obama, and he had a blown-up picture, like going to Kinko's and getting the foam core board that you can hold up. It's nice and light, and it has a sharp, tight picture. And everyone can clearly see there weren't that many people there as Obama's inauguration. That should have been a dead giveaway, if you're not, you know, even if you weren't paying attention. But, this is the thing. People, listen to your neighbors. When you are getting a type of position, let's say the FBI or a high-level government position, they come and talk to your neighbors and family. And they, you know, you're interviewed about a relative or an associate that is looking for a position. Now, New Yorker spoke. I lived in New York in the 80s from 81 through 84. And, you know, Frankie Crocker, anyway, during that time. When Trump was, you know, he was eccentric. He was crazy then. But it was clear that he was a sociopath then because of his interpersonal relationships, the way he treated women, and just his antics. It was very clear then. But this is what we get. This is what we get. This is not just the United States now.
But this is an alarm. This is a call out to those who are associated with Kanye West to really understand what you're doing to him and what you're not doing for him. And thinking, well, we're going to go along for the ride. He's running for president. Ha, ha, ha. That's not the issue. The issue is you literally disregarding a man's life. And at this time in his life, he is in great crisis. He's in major crisis.
He's in crisis. That's the correct word.
And we should not lift him up as an object of ridicule. And, you know, we can make fun of him. That's not what should happen here.
Well,
we should have a more humane view.
Does his entourage, are they so enamored with the money and the fame that they're willing to be mercenary? Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Well, don't hesitate, Idris.
This is entourage. They're all with it. Whatever he wants to do, he should do. Nobody is there to tell him, hey, the priority right now is for you to get better. And you put 100% of your effort and energy toward that. We don't need you making a public spectacle of yourself. We don't need that. We don't need entertainment from you. We need you to get better. Thanks, Khalil, for your call today. 888-874-4888. You know, I really, really point these things out because we are likely to miss the implications of these things. And a little time will go by, and then there's a major tragedy. And people start saying, oh, we should have seen that coming. We're seeing it now. And there should be enough kindness and love, whether you like Kanye's music or you don't, or whether you like him, or if you think you know him enough to say you like him or not. The fact is, what we are seeing is making an impact on several levels. The number one impact is we have somebody who obviously is mentally ill, but it is also useful that he is an African-American man. So he becomes a kind of mascot. So the next person who steps forward, they remember Kanye West. And they trivialize serious efforts coming behind him, you see? That's why we have to step forward and say, this is wrong. We don't want him to be made some kind of a bizarre mascot for mental illness, or here's a guy who has the nerve to think that he could be president of the United States. Well, I just pointed out, you have a mentally disturbed and disabled man who's been that way for years. And he's president of the United States. Now you figure out how it is that on the one hand, somebody could get all that credibility as a mentally disturbed person. And on the other hand, you have a young man who's also mentally ill. And he is now the object of derision. What was different in both of these lives? Ed, you're back. You're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing, Utrice?
Okay, how are you? And yourself?
All right. I had two comments, but I just wanted to correct you. Kanye West dropped out of the race. He dropped out over the weekend. He had some type of teleconference or virtual meeting over the internet. He made some strange comments about Harriet Tubman and another.
Yes, and Harriet Tubman was also in the slave trade.
Slave trade, but he dropped out. I mean, he's known for strange publicity stunts. I mean, I don't put him on the same or in the same mindset as Donald Trump, you know, as far as his mental condition. You know, I've heard stories about him. I've worked with a person who actually was on his production crew. And, I mean, you know, they chalk it up to intellectual genius. But he's known for strange promotional runs. I think that's what this was. Because I don't think he should seriously consider being the president. But the thing that disturbs me is what happened in Portland and how no one is saying that if those were federal agents, like upstate New York, when the prison guards and other federal agents took to enforcing, quote-unquote, stopping protesters, there's a violation of the Posse Comitatus Act. I mean, you cannot enlist federal troops or federal employees to do that type of work on this ground, and no one is saying anything about that as far as the Trump administration is concerned. And as far as that goes, they used, I don't know, when they were upstate, they had black tape over their badges. They were dressed in camouflage suits, government-issued boots, unmarked trucks. And, you know, this is disturbing because a lot of laws are being violated and no one, and the people in the position to address this aren't.
Okay. I'm so sorry about that, Ed. We lost you. We'll pick it up again.